Want to welcome everybody to the city council meeting Monday, December 7, 2015, 7 p.m. First line of business will be roll call, Mr. Stahl.
Alderman Jennings.
Present.
Alderman McCowan.
Present.
Alderwoman Schnell. Mayor Moses.
Present.
Mayor Pro Tem Adams.
Present.
Alderman Wheeler.
Present.
We have a quorum.
All right, thank you very much. Next line of business, pledge allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag, I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state under God, one and indivisible. Moving on to item 3.0, special presentations. 3.1, none at this time, evening. I'm going to move to item 4.0, approval of minutes. 4.1, if the council's had time to look over regular council meeting November 23rd, 2015, and entertain a motion.
Motion.
Thank you, Mr. Jennings. Do we have a second?
Second.
Mr. McCall. With that being said, is there any questions from the council on this? None being, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those against say nay. The ayes have it. Moving on to item 5.0, council reports and requests. 5.1, Mayor Moses. 5.1.1, update on State Highway 146 San Juan progress. I'm happy to report tonight a couple of positives that are nice and exciting, especially about the San Juan. I spent some time out there on Short Acres Boulevard, 146 today. If you hadn't noticed, on the north side, the Bayou Forest, they are now starting to replace the sound wall. They have two sections, and they may have three sections done by now. I'm not sure. They had two when I left that they were putting together. It looks very good. The grout cement that they used is a darker color, so it actually looks like, and David's going to bring it up for you, it actually looks like it's wet, but it's not. But as you can see there, where they're starting to work, they're going to, my understanding, what they're telling me, if Mother Nature agrees with everything and they don't have any other major setbacks, we're looking to get this done by the end of December, they said, on the north side. What they're doing is they're bringing a truck out, maybe two, as it is crazy. It almost looks wet, but that was dry. So when it gets wet, it'll be even darker. So actually, it's I think it looks better than we would have gone with the painted look, the other look. So that's nice. However, they found a contractor to get this done. They're going to bring out one to two trucks. They will pull a section out and replace a section at a time. And today, when I stood out there for about an hour or so, it took them about an hour to get like two little sections, and there's three sections there. But you have to remember, they're pulling a section at a time. They don't want any problems, but they are moving forward on it. The gentleman that was overseeing the project has been promoted in TxDOT, so I spoke to the gentleman that's taking his place. This side, they're finishing up on the south side, on Bayou Forest, on the 3500 block. There's a couple residents, including my own, that they had to cut trees off of the line that were in there. They've got that pretty much done. So that will be the next project for right now, is to finish this up and get it done. So it is moving in a forward motion, although this really doesn't have any jurisdiction for Shore Acres, but we do have residents that are affected by it, so I want them to understand that it is moving. So if anyone is putting anything, as we noticed today, on that walkway that they made where the wall actually sets down, trees or vegetation or anything, pots, plants, you know, things of that nature, they really need to try to get it moved and moved to a safer area, because I noticed one resident had put stuff all down that way, and they've got trees with potted plants there. They're not responsible. That's actually state property. So if they pull those walls up, knock it over, and ruin it, you know, so people need to pay attention, make sure they get their stuff off of there. But it's moving. It's going forward, so I'm glad to see that. That being said, I'll move on to 5.1.2. As a professional courtesy, I want to state something to the residents of Shore Acres as a notice of disclosure. I do business, my businesses do business with probably 90% of the plants up here and schools, San Jack, LBC, Oddfell, things like that. So I deal with these people on a daily basis. So there may be times I may be dealing with them on my professional level as a professional relationship that I have with them, but there may be times that I bring up the fact they know I'm also a mayor of Shore Acres. And the reason I bring that up is just out of courtesy, but I was fortunate enough to have dinner with the president of LBC a few weeks ago. And after I had dinner with him at a function, he invited me to his office to come sit down and talk about just general relationship stuff and things. And so it was more on the city side than really my business side, because we wanted to talk about their expansion. LBC is expanding back here with Magellan on the other side of the water. They own most of that property back there, and they are trying to work with the school, the San Jack School now, they're clearing out a lot of area, and that area is not really going to affect Shore Acres in any way, noise level or anything, because it's going to be piping, so there's no loud noises going to be built on there. But they were talking about building a dock in there for the San Jack School to be able to place a boat and whatnot in there to help out with that. So they're trying to be exceptional neighbors to try to help us out, and they're very much on. And Lawrence Waldron is the new president of LBC. He's been there about a month or two. He's really a go-getter. He's one of these type of guys that's all about the community. And with that being said, I have some exceptional news for our community of Shore Acres. We talked for quite some time, and then I just decided I'm going to throw it out there. And, you know, all they can do is say no, but he didn't. Shore Acres will receive a check from LBC somewhere around, when he said June is when they would be able to cut the check. They're going to put in their budget to replace the park equipment, all of it.
All right.
Now, the range I gave him was somewhere between up to $85,000 it could cost. They're going to give us enough to replace everything there. He said it may come in one or two checks. It would be in the month of June, so it won't come till June. So I want everybody to understand it. But it was a guarantee by a handshake and a personal tell me it's done. So I'm very excited about that. Now, whether or not I'll be in this position in June, I don't know, but the city has been guaranteed that by LBC. So I'm very happy to hear that the kids are going to have new park equipment. Now, once Shore Acres receive the funds, of course, now those funds will be donated strictly to the, what department would that go straight to? So it goes just strictly for the parks.
Yeah, we put in a line item that's for the voluntary contributions that citizens are making.
Okay.
And then in that, once it hits that line item, then it will only be available on the direction of council.
Okay. So, and that's the money that will be for our park equipment. So you're talking about replacing everything out there that's old to brand new stuff. So I was very excited about that. So, you know, we're moving in the right direction. We got a sound wall coming in finally after about 5 years. that was nice to know. So I want to thank the LBC, and especially the president over there, for doing that and offering that up. That was outstanding, and I'm very happy to hear that. So I can't wait to see when we get the money in and get the equipment. Now, I know it takes the equipment. It may take up to 2 or 3 months to get the equipment in. It'll probably be this time next year by the time it gets all put in, but it's coming. And it doesn't come out of any funds of the city of Shore Acres. And so that is a very big positive. I'm not going to say the amount because I don't know the amount, but I did tell him up to $85,000 is what they could cost. I actually sat down and looked at some prices with David. It's unbelievable what that stuff costs to do a full setup and not just a little swing and that's it, a little slot. Maybe that gives us time to try to put some type of security system out there to keep an eye on that place a little better if we can. I know the police department does the best they can, but they can't be there 24/7 sitting there. With that being said, I'm going to move on to item 5.1.3, items of interest, community interest. Unfortunately, I was out of town on business, but I want to say that the Christmas party, my understanding, my wife and my daughter were here. Mr. Stahl was keeping me, and we were talking back and forth because I was asking what was going on. The dinner went very well. We ended up purchasing King's Barbecue because the potluck has just not been what it's been over the last few years. So the city did purchase some food up here for all the kids. The kid turnout was probably the best it's been in years. It was humongous. We want to thank the fire department, J.O. Washington, Heather and Tony Cox and their kids. I'd like to thank my wife, my daughter, she was an elf, Annie, all the personnel here. It worked splendidly. They went out of their way to do things. If I left somebody out, I want to apologize, but I want to say thank you for all those involved. It made the kids very happy. When they saw LaPorte Fire Department drive up the lights and sirens and ride around, they really loved it. So I want to say thank you to them. So, but it turned out very well. So if you didn't get to make it, it was exceptional from my understanding. And with that being said, I'll move on to 6.0, public hearings and public comments. 6.1 is public comments. This is the opportunity for the public to address the council and comment on items which appear on the agenda. Time is limited to 5 minutes per speaker. Comments are to be directed to the city council. Dialogue with the audience is not permitted. Council members are prohibited by law participating in discussion deliberation of items especially identified on the agenda. With that being said, I'll start right here in front of me. If anybody on the black roll, Mr. Moyer?
Yes, yes, it's me.
First one. Can your name and your address, sir, please?
I'm Neil Moyer, North Country Club Drive, and I'm going to speak on agenda items 8.2, 8.3, and 8.5. I think all three of these items, no matter how well-intentioned, are ill-advised at this time. They would essentially be the distribution of city revenues for private purposes. And as you know, city revenues have been an issue of some concern over the years. I have one word to address that, and that's sewage. That's not the word that I would otherwise hit, but as you will hear later on tonight, because of shortcomings in our budget, we're not proceeding ahead at the present time, but hopefully will, on the 21-inch sewer line. That's agenda item 8.4. Now, that may not mean much to most people because sewer lines are out of sight and out of mind, and when you pull the lever to flush, hopefully everything goes away and it's a happy day. That sewer line, though, is the only thing between us and the sewer plant. Everybody's flushes go through that line. It's an open line. It collapsed. And there's no capital money in the budget this year for that. So that means some council's going to have to take some action to take money from one place, presumably the reserves, but maybe something else creative will come up. But the point is, this is a revenue-constrained city, and items 8.2, 8.3, and 8.4 are essentially going to give away revenues, possibly in the next budget. That means the council will already have had its hands tied and will not be taking that into account in their budgetary considerations. So that's why I recommend that these three items be deferred at a minimum until the next budget process, so that when that budget process comes up, if these items still are germane at the time, they can be dealt with appropriately during that budget process. So I'd recommend that these three items, like I said, be at a minimum deferred or declined if necessary at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Yeah. If you can give us your name and address for the recording, please.
Darlene Gamble Bay, 626 Bayway. Three things. I disagree with Mr. Moyer. I believe we should at least give an exemption to the disabled over the age of 65, because there's many of us that have lived in this community and paid taxes, and I think we deserve that break. Other towns do. Maybe they're not in the financial condition we're in, but there can be cuts made to accommodate the few that fit in this bucket. That's my opinion. Second, I don't know who's responsible for it. I've been going around for a year and a half. There's a lot behind me on Shady Lawn. It's in the 600 block, probably 613 or something like that, that the taxes have been unpaid since the mid-90s. And so it reverted back, from what I understand, to the school district and the city and the port. School district being the main one that holds the majority of it. I talked to Mr. Clausen about it because the neighbors on one side keep up the front. The fence line that is up against the middle is awful shape. I've got vines and bushes. And in fact, a couple trees came down on it this past year, and the school district did remove those, didn't fix the fence because they said they're not responsible for that. That I fixed, we fixed. And now it's really hurting my fence line. In fact, if something isn't done about it, then my fence is going to come down. And I don't think it's my responsibility or Kent's responsibility to pay for the school district's lack of maintenance, which I was told they are accountable for. Now I'm told they're not. And they were supposed to call the city. I don't know if they did or not. Probably not. To check with y'all. But something needs to get done before I lose the fence. And it wouldn't take that much. I mean, to cut all that off and spray it with something. I would appreciate that getting looked into. Like I said, it's been about a year and a half, and it's getting pretty bad. And then third, thank you, Rick, for your photograph.
Yes, ma'am. My pleasure.
I know that would make Wayne very happy.
Anybody else would like to talk? No? Ma'am? No? Okay. All right. We're moving on to item 7.9, administrative reports. 7.1, general activity report, city administrator David Stahl.
Good evening. In the general activity report, just two quick notes. The roll-off container that was placed in front of water plant number one on Sharky Boulevard was well-received and well-used. It was filled twice with debris from the city by our residents, and it was pulled off at the end of November as the original plan was. The second item is talks about the concrete work that we keep anticipating to start on South Country Club and also here at the rear City Hall. The contractor had been delayed again, although today they did come out and take site measurements, and I understand that the forming crews will be here tomorrow and that work will get done this week. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Stahl. Council members, do you have any questions, Mr. Stahl, on item 7.1?
Just one question.
Mr. Hendricks.
About the parks fund that you mentioned earlier in the mayor's talk. Any idea where that stands, Mr. Stahl?
Stands as in?
The amount of money generated for the voluntary contribution.
My recollection is the balance is about $800, but I can report on that.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Moving on to item 7.2, monthly police report. Chief Harrison.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council. Mm-hmm. Like you've seen it before, I'll go right to the one weapons call that we had, because I know someone will ask about that. Those are always important. That was just a car that had flashed a gun at a citizen in Seabrook and just happened to come through our city on 146 on their way to Baytown. Didn't have any action with it, but because it was called in, it's on the report. Other than that, it was a what we call a normal month. We're getting into the time of year where we encourage folks to be safe when they're shopping, keep items locked away outside in their vehicles, and most definitely if you're at home this time of year and you're bringing Christmas presents home and things like that so that folks can see you unloading your vehicles, it's wise to keep doors locked and lights on and those things. So that's the free public service announcement for this month. I'll share some good news with you that it's always exciting to talk about the officers. Officer Sarah Tank completed his intermediate certificate last month, which in itself is impressive because it was so quick. But what's more impressive is the fact that our training budget is not a real healthy budget. And he knew that, so he went out and completed most of these courses out of his own pocket, on his own dime, on his own time. So I'm real proud that young man is performing a great job for the city and doing things to get ahead. So he'll be a good officer for a long time to come.
Any questions to council?
One. Do you have one, Dave?
Go ahead.
On the reckless driver conduct, were they all the same? Same location, same type of reckless, or is it just a rarity of maybe builds an acceleration or what?
We get numerous calls for reckless drivers. Normally, it comes either out of LaPorte or out of Seabrook, and we just happen to be the city in between the two that gets called. On any given day, and a lot of these calls like that goes under assist by law for some reason, that's where they put it. But any given day, you'll hear that call a time or two a day about reckless drivers. Unless we're sitting on the freeway, even if you're sitting at the office, by the time they come out of Seabrook and we get the call, normally they're north of us by the time we get to the freeway.
Okay.
Do you have a question?
No.
Anybody else? Mm-hmm. Chief, I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm just curious if you know off the top of your head, just roughly. The traffic stops, we had about 160. I don't know if it was on speeding tickets or on speeding per se and things like that. Is there, how many of those are the 18-wheelers running up and down the road now? I'm just sort of curious if there's
not many of them. Not many. I mean, obviously before the flyby was built, they didn't get a good start at us.
Right.
Now that it's out there, they get a better start at us. But speed limit 60 out there, those trucks, they're big and heavy and make a lot of noise, but to get them going much faster than that's really not going on.
Thank you, Chief. Have a good evening, sir. Yes, sir. Appreciate it. Moving on to item 7.3, monthly public works report, Mr. Starr.
Good evening. The written report is in your packet. I would note that we have had all the works employees on vacation at that time of year, and we still managed to spend 40 hours in the last month of mowing ditches, and we're looking forward to the grass slowing down and us catching up. That's all I have.
Any questions after that one?
Please.
Mr. Stahl, was this the month that we got the thing in the water bill about the problem with the testing or whatever, or am I off a month?
That was last month.
Can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, there's every day we take residual chlorine samples, multiple points in the city in the system. We take that reading and then we do a daily report, and that's compiled into a monthly report, and the monthly reports are compiled into a quarterly report. That reporting is done religiously. We've not had any drops in getting the reading statement or those reports prepared, but in the prior quarter, the quarterly report did not get mailed. It was prepared, it was left on a desk, and it didn't get put in the mail, and so it was not received by TCEQ. And the result of that is TCEQ mandates that you send a letter that they word. So the letter that went out is the wording that's prescribed by TCEQ. And a copy of that quarterly report was attached to it. And that's what we sent out. There's no deficiencies in our chlorine residual levels. It was a matter of not sending in a quarterly report. There's no financial penalty. There's no other any penalty that goes with that other than sending that letter and that quarterly report out to all of our water users.
Who's responsible for sending that out?
The Public Works Director, Utility Director.
Bottom line is there was no problem with our water, right?
There's no problem with water whatsoever.
Correct.
That's correct.
Because a lot of people were going nuts over that.
Yeah, no, there's no problem with water, but now that you bring that up, let me do raise an issue. There has been a concern with like a hardness of our water recently,
browning,
causing rings in porcelain objects that are common in homes, mm-hmm. Both in Shore Acres and in LaPorte. We've been working with LaPorte about that. We're not quite certain what's causing that. It's not a water quality issue in terms of any health interests, but there is a change in the hardness. And as you may know, all that water comes from Lake Houston. We buy that through the East Water Plant, which is over by Ellington. That's where that water is treated, and then it's sent to the LaPorte Area Water Authority, and the LaPorte Area Water Authority then sells that water to Shore Acres and Morgan's Point and the City of LaPorte. And so we are exploring what is going on with that water. We flush some lines because of that and trying to reduce the impact, and it's not something that's happening in our system.
I am glad you brought that up because I'm going to play this for my wife when I get home. She thought I was failing on the job. Not my fault.
Any other questions? Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Mr. Stahl. Moving on to item 8.0 business. Before I move to 8.1, Alderman Snell was out ill tonight. I hope she gets to feeling better. She has asked me to put on January 11th. Venues 8.3 and 8.5, so both 8.3 and 8.5 will be skipped tonight. It'll be moved to January the 11th of 2016. And moving on to item 8.1, consideration approval of invoices. If the council has time to and time to review the invoices, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Wheeler. That being said, does the council have any questions on invoices? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those against say nay. The ayes have it. Moving on to item 8.2, discussion and action to adopt ordinance number 2015-192, establishing elderly homestead property tax exemption relating to ad valorem tax freeze for residential homestead property owners who are disabled or 65 years of age or older. Alderman McComb.
Excuse me, Mayor Moses, point of order.
Yes, sir.
There was a typo in the agenda, and it should have been a new ordinance, number 195, and because we'd already voted on 192, and that was defeated, and the wording in this one was changed, so, you know, that's a point of order, but I do have a solution. I talked to CML today. It's up to you at your discretion as chair,
okay,
whether you accept it or not. I would like to make a motion to change the ordinance to 2015-195.
Okay.
And if you allow me to do that, then it'll erase that point of order,
I think,
and then we can go forward.
I don't see a problem with that at all. So we would basically...
I make a motion to change this to ordinance number 2015-195.
All right. We have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Wheeler. Any questions from council over this amendment? All right. All those in favor of changing 2015-192 to ordinance number 2015-195, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The ayes have it. Now we'll go back to the original, which would be discussion of it. I'm going to read it again this time. Discussion and action to adopt ordinance number 2015-195. Establishing elderly homestead property tax exemption relating to the ad valorem tax freeze for residential homestead property owners who are disabled or 65 years of age or older. Alderman McComb.
Even though that I brought this up, everyone should know this is not my brainchild. It was Alderman Jennings. There were some of the things I liked in his first resolution. There's a couple things I didn't like. So after the meeting, I told Mr. Stahl that I wanted to go ahead and try it again with tweaking it just a little bit. Even though this is has my name on it, it started with Mr. Jennings, which I want to say thank him for bringing it forward. And it's so confusing that there's a slide presentation that we're going to present, and I'm going to have David Stahl explain it because of the fact I tried to do it myself and I get so confused that I'd rather him try to explain it to you than me having y'all so confused you don't know whether it's Christmas or New Year's Eve. Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Stahl, please.
All right. Should I push the right button here?
Yeah.
There we go. Okay. For clarification, the city in 1973 adopted a $3,000 homestead exemption for homeowners, and it says over the age of 65, but 65 or over. Since 1973, the amount of that exemption has been increased four times. Today, our 65 and over exemption is $40,000, and I wanted to clarify that because there was some misconception that we did not have an exemption for 65 and over. And we do. It's $40,000. That's as it exists today. The city has also, over time, adopted a $7,500 homestead exemption for qualified disabled residents. It's the same state qualifications for disabled, whether it's a city exemption or county or school district or etc. The homeowners can only claim one of those two exemptions. Disabled at $7,500 or at the 65 and over, the $40,000. What's proposed this evening, and I'll try to put on a chart here to kind of help. If you're 65 or over, today the exemption is $40,000. This proposed ordinance leaves that at $40,000, so there's no increase for the 65 and over. For disabled, today it's $7,500. Now, if you are 65 or older and disabled, you could take one, and I would reason that you would take the 65 and older and get the $40,000. So that would leave the disabled really as the under 65 age disabled for all practical purposes. This proposes to take that disabled exemption from $7,500 to $60,000, which is a 700% increase for those homeowners that are meeting the disabled requirement. So the effect of this also is that if you're over 65 and disabled, today you would get the $40,000 exemption by virtue of being 65 or over. With this ordinance passed, you could elect to take the disabled instead of the 65 and over and get an increase in exemption of another $20,000. So this would help our disabled residents who meet the requirements of disabled under the tax code to get a $60,000 exemption would be significantly improving the position of those that are under 65 and would likewise also provide an additional $20,000 of exemption for those that are 65 and over. Currently, in the last year, we have 125 who claimed the 65 and over exemption at the $40,000. With the passage of this ordinance in terms of financial impact, we would expect that that number would be less than 125 if there were any disabled, qualified, 65 and older. So the under 65 and disabled was 11 in this last year, and we would expect that number to stay the same with the exception of those who become 65. That impact, if it were 11, is approximately $5,000 reduction in the tax revenue from those property owners. The over 65 and disabled is an unknown number because we don't know how many that qualify as disabled are currently not taking that because it's more advantageous to take 65 and over. But it can't really be more than the 125 because that's the total number. If it were at the 125, it'd be a little more than $20,000 of impact on tax revenue on that. And so we would expect it to be more than the 11 that would fall into that category. All that said, while you could look at this and say that it has a potential impact of $25,000, which is not a lot of money, the fact of the matter is, as was talked about at the last council meeting, the effective tax rate rolls that back in to the other taxpayers. So those of you who are able-bodied and under 65 will pay a little bit more so that those that are over 65 and particularly those who are disabled will get some relief on their taxes. And, you know, all the money comes out of the same pot. We're moving peas around on the plate, but Council McCowan asked for the ordinance to be drafted to provide the assistance that we could to the disabled residents that we have here, property owners who meet those requirements, which is what was in the original ordinance that Mr. Jennings brought to council. And it adopts the same numbers that Alderman Jennings had, which is the full $60,000 exemption. So it does move the over 65s up to $60,000 if they are disabled, and it takes those who are under 65 that were only getting an exemption of $7,500 and raises them by $53,500 to $60,000. And I hope I didn't confuse anybody with that. I would also make one clarification from the last meeting. There was a comment made about the tax freeze that's referred to in the ordinance. In the tax code, once you authorize a tax freeze, it's forever. We have done that in the past, so this is nothing new. This ordinance has a lot in it. It talks about the 65 and over that is the same as what we have. It talks about the freeze, which is the same as what we have. And it does not create a new exemption. It just increases the amount of exemption for disabled, qualified disabled property owners. And it's all put into this ordinance to clarify it. One issue we had is the $7,500 exemption was not well memorialized. And so that will now be, if this ordinance were to pass, that will be put into place. And since you can only take one exemption or the other, it made it cleaner to put all of it in this ordinance as it was prepared last time by the city attorney, and now with the modifications. Now, I confuse everybody.
Council members, any questions? No questions? Okay. Thank you, David, for the presentation. I appreciate it. So I'll entertain a motion. And motion was made by, did you make the motion? No, you didn't.
I'll make the motion.
We have a second.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. Okay, we have a motion on the floor made by Jerome, second by Richard Adams. Questions for council members? No? That being said, all those in favor for adopting ordinance number 2015-195, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those against, say nay. The ayes have it. Okay. I'll make note to this pass. As I said earlier, 8.3 and 8.5 have been removed. So we're going to move on to 8.4. Discussion of a 21-inch sewer line failure, condition of that portion of the city's collection system, primarily work done in preparation for repair, and current planning and scheduling for action to complete the necessary repair. Simply, this is a discussion. Mr. Stahl.
Yeah, I'd really rather talk about taxes again, but let me get you another set of pictures. Right before our last council meeting, this presented itself. This is a sinkhole. This is on West Country Club, North Shoreditch Boulevard. It is on the west side of the street. It is in the city's street right-of-way. The private property that abuts it is on the other side of that fence that you see at the top of the picture. This is what it looks like from the side. It was a very sizable sinkhole. We found this at the same time that we were experiencing elevated surcharging in our wastewater collection system west of Taylor Bio. And surcharging is the term we use for when there's more water in the pipes and the manholes than there's supposed to be. And that's not uncommon during heavy rain events and flooding, but we were having neither one of those when we were discovering this particular surcharging, and we found this sinkhole, and this sinkhole was in fact the cause of that. We have a 21-inch C76, which is a reinforced concrete pipe there in 4-foot sections that was installed in about 1963, so it's over 50 years old. It is at one end 12 feet deep, the other end 13 feet deep, although it's laid fairly flat, and we'll come back to some of the specifics of that. But with this collapse, it was restricting the flow of our gravity line that flows north along West Country Club, and so it happened at one of the most inopportune times, because it happened right before Thanksgiving, when it's hard to get people, contractors and vendors and people to help you out. But we did rent this what's called a quiet pump. It's a diesel-powered sewage pump, trash pump, and it is set in place on West Country Club. This is the hard suction that pulls out of this upstream manhole, and then the yellow line, the hose that you see there, is the discharge. And the discharge runs down or north on West Country Club to the manhole that we have that's past the failure. Of all of the failures that we could have, it's on one of the lines we would like to not have a failure on. But of all the places on that line we could have a failure, this is the best place to have a failure because it wasn't under the street. It is adjacent to the street. In the far end of that picture, well, you can't really see it. And that's, I'll get to see the laser works here. There's an orange cone right there. That's the downstream manhole. So we're pumping from here, and the pipe is in a straight line there. And here, of course, is the sinkhole. So the majority of this line is not under our brand new street. West Country Club. So if we were going to pick a section, this would be the section I would pick to have the fair. It presents itself so you can easily find it, and it's not under our new table. So here's our bypass pumping. This bypass pumping will have to be in place 24 hours a day, 7 days a week until we have the line repaired. That's the bad news. The good news is it doesn't create any limitation on our system. So there is no disruption of sewer service whatsoever. We do have the incremental cost of having to run the generator and rent it, but it keeps us up. So there is no health issue. There's no service loss while we deal with this. This is the discharge manhole, so this takes the wastewater and puts it back into this manhole, which then gravity flows the rest of the way. This is looking from the north, looking south. And there's the sinkhole is all cordoned off. Now you can't see the pipe in that hole. All you see is dirt in the bottom. And the sinkhole is about a third of the depth down to the line. So there is a process you go through on addressing a collapse like this. One is that you have to understand what your failure is so you know how to write the specs to go out and get quotes or bids to have work done to make the repairs. One step of that is to, what they call televise or TV the line. You send a camera through the line and you can inspect the damage and the failure and the condition of the pipe. We started that process from the manhole where you saw the pump set up initially, and we went 30 feet north to the collapse, and we found that that pipe was very deteriorated. Not unexpected in that it's concrete pipe, and when you put wastewater in a concrete pipe, wastewater creates hydrogen sulfide gas, and it condenses on the top of the pipe, and then it turns into hydrogen sulfide acid, and it eats away the concrete. And over time it erodes it and thins it out. When we set the camera up into that pipe to look at it, you could see the rebar reinforcements in the concrete pipe. As you approach the failure, and the entire top of course fell out where the failure's at, and we have dirt into the pipe. The truck now here is on Schroeder's Boulevard because the condition of that pipe away from the failure was such that we could anticipate the rest of the pipe on both ends is in the same condition. And so when we make the repair, you want to take advantage of economy of scale and look at doing preemptive repair on that line to the extent that it's feasible. And so to know what we're dealing with, we want to televise that line from Schroeder's Boulevard all the way to water plant number one, which is at the north end. The big barrel-looking object sitting there is a 21-inch plug. It's an air plug that you put in the line so that they can stop the flow while they do the TVing work. The work has been going on for more than a week. It ran through last Friday. Their equipment broke down about halfway through Friday. This particular piece of equipment you see here is a vacuum truck. That's what they had a mechanical problem with. And today it was in the shop, and they are scheduled to be back out tomorrow. The line was full of a large amount of sand in the bottom of that pipe, and so the sand has to be removed before you can televise that. So it's been slow going. They'll be back tomorrow. We're hoping that by the end of the week or mid next week, we'll complete the analysis of the review of that line. Every time a section of 100 feet or so of pipe is completed and televised and sent to the engineer for their review. This is a photograph of the inside of that pipe. You can see the coarse roughness on the sides. That's the aggregate and the concrete that's exposed. You can see a water line in some of the photos. The concrete looks really good below the water line, which is typical as well because the water keeps the gas from getting to it. What looks like a rope or a pipe that's draped through there, that's a rubber gasket. These are Bell concrete pieces that push together, and there's a concrete donut that's in there that provides a seal. And once the concrete erodes away, it drops the seal. And so you'll find that every 4 feet, pretty much to this line, you've got the seal hanging down. One of the, and you see one in the far distance that's darker. It looks like a shadow, but that's actually the next 4 foot section, and then that's the dirt where it's collapsed. So this is that portion of the system. This is some of the drawings from when the pipe was put in. And so you do not see the extension. You do not see bioforest. Bioforest would be here. Wind leaf would be out this direction. This is the manhole in the middle of Shortacres Boulevard, which at the time that this was drawn, Shortacres Boulevard was shell, and it was not divided. So it was all on the north side of what's now divided. And this is West Country Club. The failure is right about here in this bend where it goes across. Right there. And this is the flow. We have a main that comes down Shortacres Boulevard, makes a 90 degree turn, goes up here. This is where our water tower is at, water plant number 2. There's a manhole that's inside the fence line at water plant 2. It makes a 90 degree turn, and then it goes all the way across underneath 146 to a manhole and then to our lift station. And from there we pump it to Bay Area, Gulf Coast waste disposal. The problem, one of the significant issues for us is that at this point of this failure, the only thing that doesn't flow through that line is bioforest on this side and wind leaf, and 2 houses here. Houses here and here and all the way to Galveston Bay all go through that 21-inch line. So it is a very significant line to us. So we will be televising the line and doing an inspection from here to here with the failure being there. There's where we bypass pump presently, that little red arrow squiggle. And this is the section that we're looking at. Initially, the thought was to replace the pipe from manhole to manhole using what's called pipe bursting so that we can try not to excavate any more than we have to and replace that. But when we saw the condition of the pipe, that does not look like the most cost-effective way to address it. So we're looking at, and we won't know until we have all of the information, the feasibility of going from Shortacres Boulevard to that north manhole. Back on November 24th, right before Thanksgiving, we got a quote for an emergency mobilization and repair from manhole to manhole, just that one 224-foot section to pipe burst that and replace it. There were lots of issues. One was that the 21-inch pipe wasn't available over the holidays, and that it would require to go up to 24-inch. And then it would be emergency mobilization, and we're talking holidays when you're doing something in between Thanksgiving and New Year's. And the quote that we got to do that repair work was $82,300 for that one 224-foot section. That included well pointing and a couple other connections in there.
Could you explain this pipe burst?
Yeah, pipe bursting is you take a high-density polypropylene line, which is a black flexible plastic, and you get it to the size of the existing pipe typically, or it could be a little larger, and you pull a pig in front of it in the existing pipe, and this pig has a set of 6 pads that are hydraulic and in 2 sets. And it runs up in the pipe and holds itself in position, and then the back set extends out, and it literally breaks and disintegrates the pipe that it's in. And it pulls the polypropylene into that section. And so it just moves through, bursting the pipe ahead of it and pulling the polypropylene liner through the hole that's left. And so it compresses those walls out and pulls the liner through. That's a real good way to do it because you don't lose capacity. We have On Shore Acres Boulevard, we have pulled a liner before, and we use the HDPE as well, but in that particular case, you use a smaller diameter to fit inside the 21-inch pipe that was there. And so you lose a little capacity. So ideally, you like to not lose capacity, and pipe bursting also allows you to increase capacity. So that's what the pipe bursting process is. Now that we are getting more information and we're looking at what the situation is there and looking at what is the best use of our money and long-term repair, where we're at now is I asked the engineer we were working at what's called cured in place. And a cured in place is a non-mechanical, it's a weak mechanical, but it's really a non-mechanical repair in terms of structural strength, but it is of integrity. And what this does is you take an existing line and you have what's like a sausage tube that's made out of fiberglass fiber, and you put resin on it and you pull it through the line. And then they use a steam generator, and they inflate it with steam. And it presses this fiberglass bag, which is a long tube, out against all the walls, all the surfaces. And the steam causes the catalyst to kick off and the fiberglass resin, and it hardens. And so you get about a quarter inch thick fiberglass lining that's continuous in the pipe. And after it's sets up, then you go back and you can, using a robot, internally you can cut out your taps and your connections. Lines that are over 10 foot deep, I have always advocated not to do that because that creates a new breach of your integrity. So what I prefer to do is to cut them at the manholes, and then you chink and seal between the fiberglass and the pipe at the manholes so that you have integrity, and then lay a shallow line to pick up your taps. So you have an 8-inch line that's 3 foot deep that goes to the manhole so that you don't put new taps that are weak when you're 10 feet or more below. The advantage of this is it does not require any surface disruption, so it's all done through the manholes. Even with pipe bursting, you have to dig a pit, as we did when we bored under Shore Acres Boulevard. You might remember that giant pit that we dug on the north side to go under those lanes. This is all done out of the back of a truck and down through the manhole with this flexible tube, and then it's inflated and cured in place. And it's minimum disruption. You don't have to dig anything up, and it provides a very good seal. It then forever blocks the water and the gases away from the concrete and keeps its integrity. And this is particularly good where most of our pipes are at the center of the street, and with the exception of this one piece here that failed. And I would submit that failure is also a product of it having been under the ditch line, because over time you get infiltration through the ground, and it finds that weak pipe, and it starts the process, and as stuff comes into the pipe, then you start that process where you end up with the cave-in. So being under the center of the street reduces that, doesn't eliminate it. You still get infiltration. It goes laterally, but we're looking at that. So now, instead of doing a emergency repair from manhole to manhole, we're backing up, and it looks like the best option is to do the cured in place and to do it through the traditional publishing, getting quotes, getting bids, awarding the bids, and doing through that process. However, you have to have pipe integrity to do a cured in place. So we need to do a point repair, which is to dig where the hole is at and go down and replace the failed section. You don't have to replace all the pipe that's failing or showing rebar, but you have to replace the portion that has failed. Today we got a quote on doing that, and we are going to seek at least one more quote to do that repair. As it sits today, to go in and do that repair, with emergency mobilization, replacing 20 linear feet, which would be 5 joints of the 21-inch RCP C76, and well pointing, this quote is $27,000. Of that $27,000, $10,000 of that is well pointing. What well pointing is, when you dig below 8 foot, you often run into groundwater, and the groundwater stops you from doing the work. And so well pointing is you bring in another pump that looks similar to what's sitting there, but it's a different type of pump, and you put pipes in that are perforated pipes around the work, and you pump the groundwater out from the perimeter of the job site. And so where the groundwater would run into your open ditch, you intercept that water and you take it away. That equipment is all rental and the installation and the operation, and that's $10,000 of this $27,000. If it doesn't need well pointing, we don't have that expense. But this is to give you an idea of what the whole cost would be. I am optimistic, can't no guarantees, I'm optimistic that we can do this without requiring well pointing. By looking at our groundwater maps that we have and by the empirical evidence that we have at Center and Shore Acres, where we went to 14 feet and we did not have to do any well pointing on that job site. So I'm hoping that moving a few blocks to the west and that area that we don't have to do the well point. Again, there's no guarantees. But if we don't have to well point, this point repair gets down to $17,000. All of this is in the range of, we don't like to spend a lot of money, but it is in the range of something that we can do with the mayor and Public Works and get that done, and then go through a full bid process to get the cost down as low as we can, procure it in place, and to scope that work and decide how much it is, and bring that back to council for award of that rehab work. That will ensure that this line doesn't fail again in that same place or adjacent to it, and then address at that point any budget amendments that may be required to pay for that. So that's where we're at.
All right, Dave. Any questions from council members?
Yeah, the final fix, the cure in place fix, would be to basically go from Shore Acres Boulevard all the way to the
water tower
where it makes the 90 to go.
That would be the ideal fix, and there'll be a dollar sign reality that's attached to that, and there will be, you know, there's a mobilization. And then there's a per linear foot cost of doing the cured in place. And that'll be council's decision. If you go in,
that would still be our cheapest fix.
Yes. Even it would be the cheapest fix if you're just going between the two manholes where the failure occurred. You know, we're going to have other failures over time. We know that with the whole system, you know. But
one other question I had with using this cure in place, you said, you know, they have this material they bring in there and then they steam it. What do they do about the gaskets that are down into the? How do you cut that out or move it or?
You don't worry about it. You pull. This is like a bag. It gets about that big. In a long line, looks like a fire hose.
Okay, so it's small enough to get underneath any of the gaskets that are hanging down.
And what they do is they run a. Line down through, and then pull a larger line through, and then you get a steel cable, and it has a pig on the front of it, and the fiberglass attaches to that, and they pull it in one long run off a big reel, and as it comes off the reel as cloth, it gets impregnated with the fiberglass material and the catalyst, and they pull it all the way to the end, and then they cut it off the reel, and they hook it up to the steam machine, and they steam it up, and it gets, I mean, it's rock solid when it's done. It's obvious. It doesn't have the structural strength of the concrete pipe, though. I have done this process where the pipe ran through quicksand and the pipe would sink. And once the water got between the pipe and the fiberglass in quicksand, then it pulled the pipe down and it broke the fiberglass. So it's not, you know, it's not suited for every application, but this is an application where it's very well suited. And it does blow up like a balloon, so when you get to the manhole, it'll go a little bit bigger than the 21-inch, and you do have to use a saw to cut through it and get in there.
questions from council? David, let me just recap this one. My understanding, basically, what we're looking at is worst-case scenario. Best-case scenario right now is that section that has to be replaced. We're looking at a possible 17K, which that gives the mayor the authorization that he can approve that. And then that would get that fixed so we could get bid proposals out for the whole section to be replaced. Is that correct?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that. I would say 27,000.
Well,
I'm optimistic that we won't have to weld for him.
Well, I'm shooting low and hoping low.
Yeah, but I can't sit here and
well, if there's anything that comes up that is a large amount, then we would have to hold a special meeting.
I mean, we're going to have to look at it in total at some point because we have some other issues there.
Correct.
We have to pay for the bypass pumping that's been going on. It will have been going on for a month. We'll have to pay for the overtime because we fuel that every day.
Right.
And, you know, and we have some other costs. We have the engineering. Another thing that I did was I had the city engineer survey the right-of-way along the back fence lines because some of the fences encroach on the street right-of-way. And so we want the ultimate contractor to know exactly what is in the city right-of-way and what's private property and not have that dispute when we're in the middle of construction.
Correct.
So that's been flagged. That wasn't a big expense, but there are those things that they all add together. So I think as you recap, I would say that in addition to the expenditures that we've already consumed, which is not anywhere near 27,000, that we're looking for the mayor to spend, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of $17,000 to $27,000 to make the joint repair. And then we'll follow that up with a permanent solution in whatever extent the council so authorizes.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, David. Before we adjourn, I want to say something real quick to the council members. I want to say thank you for their service for this year. I know we're going, this is our last meeting for December, going into 2016. I want to thank, as the mayor, each and every individual that's in council, Mr. James McCone, Hawks now, Mr. Wheeler. Thank you for your service. I know that it tends to take your time up. The citizens and I greatly appreciate it. I want to thank Mr. Stahl and his staff, doing an excellent job, going out of the way all the time, everything you do for us. And I want to thank the citizens for showing up, yelling at us, and telling us what we need to do, and then praising us when we need to be praised. It works both ways. Can't have it all. But with that being said, I wish everybody a very Merry Christmas. We're going to adjourn at 8:02.